This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Do I hear one of the Jones girls in the background, Roddy? Have I heard?
Yes. They are excited. They know that I'm on here with you. And let's just say there is nobody as popular on a day where we have stuff to do. There's nobody as popular in the Jones household as you are, Wes. They absolutely love
it. Well, when
it.
Are so we going to get
fired up?
When are we going to get more TV debuts of the Jones children?
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to get the wife, Jackie, usually does a really good job of at least keeping them corralled where they won't make an appearance. Although, like, you never really know. They can open gates and stuff now, so who knows? I mean, just be prepared for one of the two to walk in at any moment. We just don't know. We just got to play by ear.
Remember when Anise set the bar with Athena on her walk-in during the show? You got to remember. So JC and Adri now have, you know, you got full license. You can basically, if you're under five, you can do what you want to do on this program. That's what we've come to find out. So,
or have four legs. Those are the two. You have four legs or you're under five.
There you go. By the way, David Hale coming up here in about 15 minutes. Look forward to having him with us. We'll get into some good talk and discussion about the ACC kickoff, which starts Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on ACC Network. Full coverage from Uptown Charlotte on both Wednesday and Thursday. Okay, during the last couple of weeks, the College Football Playoff Committee has now moved this process of a potential 12-team playoff. They've now moved it toward the campuses, if you will, athletic directors, football coaches, faculty athletic reps, and maybe more important than that, student-athletes. Well, during his pre-ACC kickoff presser last week, Mack Brown said that he asked his football team what they thought of the 12-team playoff. And reportedly, no hands went up in the room. And then linebacker Jeremiah Gimmel got involved in talking to the media. And Jeremiah Gimmel released this quote right here, Roddy. It starts by saying, "I feel like the 12 teams is too many games in a season for players who want to play long-term football. 16, 17 games in a season is a lot of wear and tear on the body, especially for guys who don't come out when they're playing." Roddy, player perspective, at least from Jeremiah Gimmel, is no on 12 teams. Surprised?
I am very surprised because I understand the perspective of, hey, we want to play a long time and, you know, I don't know what this is going to do for my body and all that. And Jeremiah Gimmel doesn't come out, so he's playing, you know, 70 to 80 plays a game. But ultimately, like, you play to win championships. And he went on further and said, you know, our goal is to win the ACC championship. And if we can't get into four teams, maybe we don't deserve to win a national championship and all that. And, like, if you put me in the dance, we're going to try and win. And all you want is a shot to win. And I understand where he's coming from because it is going to be new playing 16 or potentially 17 games. Mm-hmm. But we already have a format in college football where the national champion plays 16 games, and that's at the FCS level, and could potentially be a 17th game if you had a team that did not get one of those first-round buys, make it all the way. So from a body standpoint, if we're going to be concerned about the guys at the FBS level, then we need to look at what we're doing at the FCS level and the Division II level and all the way down. Because ultimately, like, every college football player goes through a similar experience. I know you can bigger, faster, stronger at the FBS level, but so are the players. So I am surprised by the fact that Jeremiah Gimmel would say, hey, you know, 16, 17 games, not so sure. Because the trade-off is you get a chance to win a national championship. It expands the ability to be able to do that. North Carolina's in a position where it takes effect, if it had been in effect, and if it was in effect while he's playing there, they could be a beneficiary of that.
All right. I want to kind of run to the end of the road here on this if we can. Do student-athletes, football players in particular, have a chance to stymie this whole thing, Roddy, if they want to? If football players think it's too much, is it going to die?
And that's the question that I was going to kind of pose to you. Like, does it matter what the student athlete thinks? And in my opinion, I'd be really interested to see what yours is as well. But in my opinion, it's no. Like, it's not going to matter. I mean, I think you could get majority of student athletes across the country saying that they don't want this. And if it makes sense financially, if it makes sense for college football, I think it still happens. Number one, because the guys who have voices like Jeremiah Gimmel, those guys are going to be gone. They're never going to play in a 12-team playoff. So we should be asking the freshmen. And number two, financially, it'd be really tough for the conferences, the commissioners, the CFP to say no to more money. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think if majority of student athletes say no, we don't want this, it wouldn't go anywhere?
I am look, given the landscape of where we are in the last 18 months, I think the voice of Young America in many reflections, but in this particular reflection, the voice of student athletes is going to matter. And I think it's going to resonate with the way that the front line of the college football playoff deals with this. And I'm not talking about the committee that selects the team. I'm talking about the management group. I'm talking about like Jim Clements of Clemson, who represents the ACC in that vein, right? I think the presidents of these institutions that ultimately have to ratify this, I think if there's a loud enough voice or voices about the potential for 17 games, yeah, I think it's got a chance to send them back to the drawing board a little bit. Now, that being said, it's going to have to be a fairly unified group. It just can't be, you know, Jeremiah Gimmel here, a guy in the Pac-12 there, somebody in the Big 12, somebody in the American on the backside. It's going to have to be almost like, and I'll use this as the analogy for you, almost like what we saw last year with the social media campaign when it looked like college football was in trouble with Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. And remember the brand names in college football that got involved that night? Yeah. That's what this will have to be like in order to slow down the 12-team proposal, I think.
Yeah, it would have to be. And honestly, you mentioned the brand names. It would have to be in a year where you have those brand names, because as good as Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell and Keaton Slovis and JT Daniels, as good as those guys are, they're not the names that Penei Sewell and Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields were a year ago. They don't have the following. They don't have the recognition that those guys have. So it would have to be a unique set of circumstances. I'm just a little more, I guess I'm a little more cynical that I think ultimately you're going to lay down the amount of money that this is going to make. And yes, will there need to be concessions made to protect student athletes? Absolutely. I think you could see a change in the way that you practice during the season, maybe in the preseason. Maybe you scale back the spring a little bit to help protect their bodies. But I think ultimately, when you look at the financials, that's going to help every conference. So it would be hard for any conference to stand up and say, this is an absolute no because the student athletes say it. Maybe some concessions are made, but I think it would go through either way.
Very quickly, I want to show you Mack Brown's quote from last week, too. Jeremiah Gimmel made a lot of news. Mack Brown's quote, I said we need more inclusion, in my opinion, with athletes that are playing. We need more inclusion from the coaches that are coaching, so the voices need to be heard. Decisions aren't finalized yet, but I did think it was important. Our commissioner, he's talking about Jim Phillips there, wanted reaction from our players. We're just trying to make sure that everybody understands what the thoughts of everybody are when we go into such a huge jump from 4 to 12 instead of just having it happen. And that was the quote from North Carolina's head coach, Mack Brown. Roddy, look, coaches and players are at ground zero on this. They're the ones that are going to have to go through the rigor of winning a national championship. You and I were talking before the game. The rarity of 17 games is you're going to have to go through the season, losing the conference championship game, and then go all the way back through from the opening round of the playoff and win the national title to have played 17 games. I don't know how often that's going to happen. You know, is it likely? Well, I don't know if it's likely. We're not there yet. Is it the more the merrier concept? I mean, that part of this is going to get the most discussion, I think, between now and late September. The 17 games and the comments of players over the next week or two that maybe are against this opportunity.
Yeah, and I think we'll have a better idea of how players feel after they go through ACC Media Day, SEC, Big Ten, Pac-12, the ones that still haven't gone yet. We'll kind of get a better sense. I think what's really important in this, regardless of whether or not the players can actually stop it with their voices, is just understanding where the players are and then educating them accordingly. Like, hey, we heard your concerns, Jeremiah Gimmel. We heard your concerns, North Carolina football players. We're still going to go along with the expansion, but here's what we're doing to assuage some of those concerns.
Right.
We are going to cut back the number of padded practices. We're going to take you guys off the field a little bit earlier, do little things throughout the season to save your body more so that those concerns are met. I think that education part of it could be as important as any of it because, yeah, the talking points are going to be 16 games, 17 games. How many teams do it? How many teams can get there? And we won't know until we get there. But knowing how student athletes feel, it goes back to your point and the voices that they have, it's going to be important to address those concerns, if nothing else.
Yep, good stuff. All right, more to come on that this week, I'm sure, before we wrap things up in Charlotte on Thursday afternoon. When we come back, David Hale lends a thought to what he thinks may transpire in those 2 days in the Queen City. And Hale's out front on, he's got units. Top receiving groups, rushing groups, defensive line, running back, all that and more. So we're looking forward to catching up with David Hale. We will do that on the other side of this timeout. Ranking position groups, a thankless task this time of year, but David Hale's our man from ESPN.com. He's next.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Grin Durham, Monday program. Roddy Jones is here. Mark Packard's on the illness list. Let's go with that for a day or two.
IL. Call it IL.
Illness list. We have already had David Teal on here, who had the thankless task of putting together an all-ACC team and ranking teams and handing out even player of the year and all those type things, right? Well, we're going to take it one step further because before we get to the fabulous Weston in Uptown Charlotte, David Hale needs to visit with this program from ESPN.com because, Roddy, David Hale, ladies and gentlemen, has gone and ranked position groups. You talk about just setting yourself up to be completely criticized by the American sporting public. This will do it right here. You start ranking position groups, Roddy.
Listen,
I feel like David Hale gets a little bored. David, you can answer this question. I feel like you get bored over the summer, like you hadn't had a Twitter fight in a while. So you're just like, You know what? We'll rank the position groups. Let's go. Is that the motivation behind this?
Well, first of all, I like that you guys stacked your show in order of declining quality of David's today, so that's good. but yes, no, I get very bored. I haven't had any fun. Like, there's no fan base that is entering the season angry with me, so I'm trying to fix some things. I think Wake Forest was slightly annoyed with me yesterday, and I was like, oh, do we have something? Do we have something? But then it was, you know, they kind of bubbled back down. They weren't really into it. So I'm working. I'm trying, guys. I'm trying to get into midseason form here.
All right, Roddy, where you want to start taking Hale down a notch or two in his human ladder here? Where you want to go first?
Oh, look, I think you have to start with the receiver group, Hale. Like, come on, man. What are we doing here? So you got Virginia Tech at one. Okay, Clemson two. Okay, NC State's down here at four. You got UNC at three. Like, we barely even know who's going to play for UNC. Yeah, I think you got something against Zay Flowers because you got Boston College at six. He didn't even make your preseason All-ACC team back in the day. Like, what's going on here?
Wait. Pitt is nine, and they've got Trey Tipton, Addison, and Taysom Mack.
Miami's got Mike Harley coming back and Charleston Rambo, and they're at seven.
What are we doing here?
So, first of all, I like it when we argue in Twitter form better. I'm not good at these, like, face-to-face confrontations. you guys are right. I'm wrong. Never mind. So let's go through these. So first of all, I had spent pretty much the entire time ranking these position groups saying mean things about Virginia Tech. So part of this is I'm offering them an olive branch here. But frankly, their numbers were really good last year. Now, not the counting numbers per se. So when you look at total receiving yards or something like that, but they were incredibly efficient at what they did. A lot of yards after contact, led the league in fewest drops. really good on explosive plays. All these things that I think are sort of underappreciated if you're just looking at a standard box score. They return their top two guys, and Trey Turner, certainly a guy with multiple years of that kind of production, plus James Mitchell, who I think has a chance to be one of the biggest matchup nightmares in the ACC this year. So that's why I put Virginia Tech there. Look, Miami has names, I'll grant you. But Miami's problem last year offensively is they had no one who could take the top off of a defense. I think Charleston Rambo could be that guy and could make a big impact in that receiving corps, but yet to be seen. The numbers overall did not really add up there. And Pitt, look, you know there's not a bigger Pitt fan in the world than me. I was on the Pitt bandwagon all year. My Kenny Pickett for Heisman campaign is just kicking off, but the drops last year were insane. The lack of red zone production, the problems on third and fourth down, just – myriad issues that really presented huge red flags for them. So, again, this was the group that Wake Forest fans got a little bit mad at me for, and I think maybe they have some right to, because Wake actually has a really, really good receiving trio there with Morin and Green and Roberson. So, look, I think it's a deep position, and as I said, one of the things that when you do anything in rankings, whether it's a top 25 list or something like this, what you lack is the nuance of margin. So I think the margin between like the top six or seven is not that high. The rest of the league, we'll have to see.
All right. I'm going to ask a general over-the-top question here. Which unit was the hardest to rank?
Defensive end was really tough because you've got Clemson, or the defensive line, where Clemson's line is insane, too deep. And if you were put out like an all ACC top two teams, like they'd probably have six of the eight players. I think Pitt is pretty good. I really like John Morgan. I think Kalijah Kansey is probably one of the better inside inside linemen in the league this year. But beyond that, I don't know. I don't know that there's a whole lot of anything because we lost a ton of really talented guys to the NFL draft from the league. And, yeah, there's some guys coming back. There's some guys that I know North Carolina is very, very excited about the talent that they have on the line, but haven't done it yet. And this is sort of – I always say, like, if I'm putting together, like, my all-ACC team, I'm going to kind of hedge towards what's already happened last year. I have guys – you know, we talked about the UNC receiving corps. Josh Downs is going to be a superstar this year. It's going to happen. It just hasn't happened yet. So it's kind of hard to make that case in advance when you don't have any real evidence to back it up other than he's good.
Yeah, I like where you have UNC on that list. I think they're going to have a good crew that probably closes the gap a little bit. You will not find a bigger Ray Vahasek fan than me. I want to talk about the secondaries next because you have Miami 1, Clemson 2, in a bit of a surprise because Clemson returns so much in that secondary, both from experience. I mean, you've got Nolan Turner, who's as we've detailed, born in 1997, which is ancient nowadays in college football. And then some great receivers. So what did it come down to secondary-wise between those top two, especially Miami and Clemson?
Part of it is a little bit of it's hard to ignore how the year ended for Clemson. And while the safeties are certainly good, and again, Nolan Turner is sort of the defensive Hunter Renfro. He's been there for a really long time now. But, you know, it's hard for me to shake the way that they sort of have been roughed up by top-tier talent. I think Miami's a little deeper. I think when you look at Bubba Bolden at safety, like if I was putting together, again, an all-ACC team, I'd probably have Bubba Bolden on it. I don't know if I'd have any of the Clemson safeties on it. Just a slight nod. Now, look, I also think when you look at sheer talent in the room, the Clemson group is as good as anybody in terms of, like, recruiting stars coming in. I just don't know that we saw the best of that group last year.
All right, David, I'm going to close at least my portion of this with running backs. I don't think anybody is surprised you've got Georgia Tech 1. Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be, if you think Josh Downs is going to be a superstar, I think Gibbs is right there with him in terms of a guy that emerges. However, I think a lot of people would be really surprised. You've got Carolina listed 2, and they lost Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. I happen to think Ty Chandler can be a game changer for Mack Brown and Phil Longo this year. Is that part of the logic in the heels being second?
Yeah, and look, I don't – first of all, yes, I love Ty Chandler. I think he's going to do really well there. And I don't want this to diminish the actual players, because Michael Carter and Javonte Williams both got drafted early, terrific players, both go for 1,000 yards last year. But part of this, too, is the system. What Phil Longo puts out there is really healthy for running backs. In 4 years as an offensive coordinator, he's had 6 running backs go for 900 yards. I have no doubt that if you stuck Roddy back there, would go for like 1,200. But even me and Wes would probably get 600-700 yards in the Phil Longo offense.
Wes not getting 700, Hale. Wes not getting 700. No. Roddy might get 12. Wes not getting 7.
I mean, you would stop and take a break for a little while, get a breather, grab a beer, and then go back out and run for some more.
Yeah, I mean, look, 1,200. I don't know about that, Hale. I got a couple bad wheels at this point. I do want to ask, running back wise, like with that list, you had Georgia Tech, you had UNC, you had Clemson. And then I feel like the group between Florida State from about 4 to 9 has to be right there together, I would imagine, because Miami's got a good talented group coming back. Again, you talk about the system. I know they struggled some last year because of the offensive line. How close is it when you're talking about Florida State, when you're talking about NC State, Louisville, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, and Miami? Mm.
Yeah, it's a great point. So Florida State's, again, I feel like if you didn't watch any of Florida State last year, the default is, well, they're not very good because they've been so bad running the football. They made big strides in that area last year, just couldn't pass protect and didn't have much of a passing offense. You look at Miami, and a healthy Derek King changes things, I think, but I still remain a little skeptical about he'll be back on the field. I think he'll be good to go, but is that knee exactly where you would expect it to be or want it to be to see 100% Derek King? And frankly, the ground game really put them in a lot of second and long, third and long situations last year. So they were a much more of a boom or bust offense. Virginia Tech, they probably had the best running game in the ACC outside of Carolina last year. But was that more Khalil Herbert or was it more what Virginia Tech was doing? I think that's a big question. And even Duke, which is, you know, a little below that area on the list, they might have the guy who is returning with the most productivity in Mateo Durant, who, despite a complete lack of a passing game, was averaging close to 7 yards a carry last year.
By the way, Pat Narduzzi is on line one. He'd like to talk to you about Pitt being ranked 13th. Because I'm going to tell you now, Roddy and I did the spring game, and we did a handful of their regular season stuff. Abanacanda comes into his own. Vincent Davis had a big finish on the Thursday night win at Georgia Tech. I mean, David, is it because Pitt's unknown up front? Is that why they're 13th? Or is it, hey, I'm just not real sure who's going to be the principal ball carrier?
Well, a little bit of this, again, as I said, is I kind of, in putting these together, I was like 75% pass performance, 25% expected performance. And frankly, the pass performance on Pitt with a running game for really the last 2 years now has been extraordinarily problematic. And you've seen it show up in the red zone. You've seen it show up in goal line. You've seen it show up on third and short. And look, part of this also is I have like PTSD from being on Twitter hearing Pitt fans complain about their running game. So this is all like baked into my cognition now. I think this is a group that can get better, but you lose Jimmy Morrissey. There are some questions up front. The beauty of Pitt is that this is a very established veteran offense. They know what each other does well and can build upon it. I think the defense is still going to be pretty good despite some of the losses that they have to the NFL too. I'm still fairly high on Pitt. I'm not quite, you know, like gassing up the bandwagon the way I was last year, but I've like waxed the hood a little bit. I'm open to it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. So I'll give you an opportunity. What other lists you have coming out? What other stuff you got coming out before we get kicked off? And do you want to tease any surprises on any of these things coming up?
Well, first of all, my big year to start fill-in guest on Packer and Durham top 25 list is coming out soon. I don't want to give away where Roddy is. Not top 10, though, that's for sure.
That's a good list, then. It's a good list. I mean, honestly, yeah, we're being objective exactly here.
Well, I have been studying, poring over the numbers, putting together the definitive All-ACC list that's going to make Teal look like a moron later. He's going to call apologizing for all he did. But no, we've got lots of good stuff. This whole week on ESPN.com, we're doing some look backs at realignment that happened a decade ago and maybe the directions that things could be going. I think that'll be some fun stuff for folks to check out.
All right. David Teal online at ESPN.com and for the moment on Packer and Durham. Thank you, Mr. Hale. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon. David Hale, you can read him at ESPN.com. He's done a phenomenal job. Teal, Hale, we've gone from one David to another. When we come back, Lumberjack time, Roddy. Yep. Fill in the blank is next on a Monday. Questions. Oh, we have answers when we continue after this on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham's Monday rolls on. There is a new special on ACC Network and produced in conjunction with our good friends at Raycom on the legacy of John Swofford. We'll show you an excerpt of that coming up and tell you more about how you can watch it tomorrow night here on ACCN. All right, Roddy. David Teal, David Hale, and now the premium ingredient of any Packer and Durham program, and that's a trip to Bristol. Ladies and gentlemen, time for fill in the blank. Please welcome, won't you, Andrew Brooks, back from his trip to the Pine Tree State of Maine, ladies and gentlemen, during our two-week hiatus. Mr. Brooks, good morning.
It's good to be back with you guys. Good vacation, but ready to work again.
Are you? Okay.
Wes, I love the fact now, we have to make this a big deal. For the last year of Packer and Durham, every time Drew Brooks has appeared on the show, we have not been able to see the fullness and the magnificence of the face and beard, the glory of it. And now we are getting that. So welcome back, Drew Brooks' face.
Yeah, it feels good. It feels good to be back without a mask on.
Yeah. Well, you need to hit a razor before you come to Charlotte, but it looks good for the time being.
You know. It broke. I don't know what to tell you.
All right,
let's do some fill in the blank. We wanted to get your thoughts on football as we get ready for football kickoff, which will be live on ACC Network starting on Wednesday. So we'll start off with this question. It's not the best player in the ACC, but who is the most important player on their team? The most important player to their team in the ACC, Wes and Roddy, is blank.
Wes, you want to go first on this one or you want me to?
I'll take Sam Howell. I'll go Sam Howell.
Okay.
Because I think in order for Carolina to be what Carolina wants to be, number seven has to be that guy. How's that?
Yeah. I like that. I like that. I was going to go with De'Aaron King here, but from what we saw in the spring from Tyler Van Dyke and Jake Garcia, I think that if – he were to exit for Miami, if he were to get hurt or whatever, I think they'd be okay. They certainly would not be as good. I think they'd be okay. I'm going to go with DJ Uiagalelei for Clemson.
Whoa.
And normally I wouldn't put the Clemson quarterback on this list, but behind Uiagalelei with the injury to Tyson Pumachon, there is a significant drop-off between Uiagalelei and whoever takes the next snap. Bubba Chandler and Will Taylor both drafted. We'll see what they decide to do. It seems like the indications are that you may lose one of those two, Hunter Helms being the other one. I think it's Uiagalelei because you don't have Uiagalelei behind Trevor Lawrence like you did last year. I think it's going to be DJ at Clemson.
All right. Drew?
Unfortunately, the correct answer was Josh Macri, Team ACC Network. All right, next question. Last season, there were four ACC teams with a winning record in conference. Blank teams will have a winning conference record this season.
Oh, man. In conference, that's tough. How many, like, in a normal year, what, you get four or five? I'll say five. I think Clemson, NC State, UNC, North Carolina, and somebody else. I'll go with five, and then you get a couple of them at 500.
What about Miami?
Did I not say Miami? Miami should have been on that list if I did not say them.
You're going Clemson, NC State, and the Atlantic, right? You're going to go Carolina, Miami, Virginia Tech in the Coastal? Is
in
that right?
In the Coastal. I left the fifth spot open because I think you could get a Virginia Tech, you could get a Pitt, you could
Boston
get a
College.
Wake Forest out of the Atlantic. You could get a Boston College. I think picking six is too many just because they all have to play each other, so you're going to get a group at 500. So I'll go five, the four that I mentioned, and then a wild card, one of those teams we just talked about.
I'm going to go four for sure. And it leads to the next question, too. So, Drew, go to the next question, but I'm going to say four today.
It does. So before we get there, in 2019, there were four teams that finished with a conference or winning record in conference. 2018, there were five. The next question, though, how many of these teams this season will win more than 10 games or at least 10 games, I should say?
I'll go first, and I'm going to say four. I think
14. Whoa. You're going four winning 10 games?
Yep. Yep.
Man. Do you want to name the four?
Well, I think Clemson's going to win 10. I think there is a chance that of the following three, Carolina, Miami, and I'm going to put Pittsburgh there, and I may live to rue those words, but I'm going to put Pittsburgh on the 10 list. Of those three, two will win, and then on the backside, somewhere along the way in the Atlantic, NC State or Boston College is going to win 10. One of those two. How's that?
Wow. Wow. That's bold. I'm gonna go three. I feel pretty good about three. I think it's Clemson, it's UNC, and it's Miami. And the reason that I can't go more than that is both UNC and Miami play NC State. So you kind of get some cannibalization there. I don't know other than that who the candidate is. I think two is the safe bet. I think you get three this year though.
Okay.
We're working on the math to see if four is even possible. The stadium that you guys are most excited to be at in person this season is blank.
The stadium we're most excited to be in.
Oh, that's a good question.
I'll take any. Roddy, I'll take any.
Right. Here's the one I'll go with. I'll go with one for sentimental value because I haven't been there in years, and then one from an environmental standpoint. Like the environment, I think I got to say Lane Stadium because I think I just love going to Virginia Tech. I think it's awesome. Clemson's obviously on that list too, but environment-wise, I'll say Lane Stadium. We have not been to Scott Stadium in years, Wes. I haven't been. I can't remember the last
time
I was at
yourself.
Scott Stadium. It may be like 2015, just the way things have worked out. Yeah, you've been there much more recently than I have. But I haven't been to Scott Stadium in forever. So I'll say that one because I've missed it probably the last four seasons.
I would say I'm going to tell you Raleigh is going to be pretty hot early in the year.
Yeah.
Raleigh is the one that, to be honest with you, I think NC State people are going to be there. That Thursday night game with South Florida we've got here on ACC Network, that game is going to be rolling because that's a Jeff Scott had a nice team a year ago, a building group there, enthusiastic, young and talented group. Roddy, we saw them a couple of years ago into Charlie Strong. They were kind of all over the place. They didn't have a great wins-loss season last year, but they did enough to get better. And NC State's got a lot on the line. I think opening night in Raleigh is going to be really interesting. I'll say Raleigh. Carolina is sold out in Chapel Hill. I think people are excited in Winston-Salem. I honestly do believe any stadium is going to be really exciting as the season starts.
Yeah, you and I had an opportunity to go to a number of stadiums, but we went to an empty Keenan Stadium. You had to miss that one. I'm sorry. You had to miss that one.
Nice.
But an empty Keenan Stadium to start the season. Yeah, I didn't know if I'd wanted to mention it, but yeah, we're here now. We went to an empty Heinz Field a number of times.
That
we
had was an crazy. Empty,
it was. We had an empty stadium up at Syracuse. So being there with fans, and we had some that had some fans in it, especially towards the end of the season, but being there with fans, is just that's what I'm going to enjoy the most.
All right, last question. The transfer you are most excited to see this season in the ACC is blank.
Ooh. Mr. Jones?
I am going to go with Charleston Rambo at Miami. I think with what David said about taking the top off the defense is absolutely true for them at receiver. But there was a consistency issue with drops last year outside of Mike Harley. I think Charleston Rambo solves that for them. He was an extremely productive player. He's got all the bona fides, like performed in the five-star recruit, performed in the Big 12, checked all the boxes in the spring. I am fascinated to see what he can do. And on the defensive side, it may be Jermaine Johnson at Florida State, the defensive end transferring from Georgia.
Well, I was going to give you two guys that I think can impact in the Coastal, and we've talked about them here today. Number one, I think Ace Ely, the transfer from Maryland, can have a significant impact at Georgia Tech at linebacker. And then I'm going to go with Ty Chandler, who we just talked with David Hale about. Ty Chandler has got over 2,000 all-purpose yards at the University of Tennessee, Roddy. I mean, he's somebody that can do a lot of different things for Carolina, including catch the ball out of the backfield. I think he's an acceptable blocker, if you will, in the pass game for Sam Howell. And there's no question he can run it. So I think those two guys in particular. But you mentioned Jermaine Johnson. Jermaine Johnson's got a chance to set the edge now and do it in a big way for Florida State. And if Florida State gets a pass rusher off the edge, that's going to change a lot about who they are, don't you think?
Yeah, it absolutely will. And look, there are a lot of impact guys across the league. Tyreek Stevenson at Miami, another transfer from the University of Georgia. Kyrick McGowan, the transfer from Northwestern going to Georgia Tech as a slot receiver, had a chance to see him some this spring. He is a dude. Like, he's a guy that's going to be able to get open and provide Jeff Sims with a go-to receiver. So and then you talk about the line. Like, there's plenty of linemen who've transferred all over the place, and we'll see impacts there. They're not necessarily as sexy from a name standpoint in terms of what we're going to talk about making an impact, but there are going to be a lot of guys who have moved schools that make an impact. And we haven't even mentioned Mackenzie Milton. He may be the one that does have the biggest impact when it's all said and done.
Yeah, you're right about that. Good stuff, Drew. Thanks. Fill in the blank on Packer and Durham. When we come back, a preview of tomorrow night's special. A long visit with John Swofford about not just the legacy at the ACC, but the legacy of his life and how athletics played such a formative role in it. Next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, Monday show right here on ACC Network. Thanks to David Hale and David Teal for being a part of our first show back in a couple weeks. Said this a couple times. Those of you that dialed in, you see Roddy Jones. Always good to have Roddy here. Roddy's on the way to get a haircut, by the way. More on that in a minute.
Yeah.
I'm on the way to get one, too, but not as drastic as the one Roddy's going to get. The Packer, Mark would have been here today, would have been here this week. Mark tested positive for the Delta variant. He's fully vaccinated, does have some symptoms, seems to be doing better. We wish him the best, but obviously out of play for this week. And maybe by late this week we can get him to a point where we can get him back on the show. But nonetheless, that's where Pack is. So we appreciate Roddy filling in today and tomorrow. And then full coverage of the ACC kickoff Wednesday and Thursday, starting at 9 a.m. right here on ACC Network. 9 a.m. both days is when we'll start our coverage. 8 hours on Wednesday, 7 hours plus on Thursday. So you'll get full coverage of the Atlantic Coast Conference kickoff.
It's our first time back in person in a while, in a couple of years. I just want to make sure. I want to make a public service announcement to everybody. Make sure you hydrate. Hydrate. 8 hours of TV is a long time. So, Wes, hydrate. I know EMAC and EJ and Coach and Jordan are going to be on there with you. Hydrate, guys. Start now. Start now. You got to prepare now for the marathon that's going to be ACC kickoff. Can't have anybody going down with a cramp.
No doubt. One of the things we're doing to celebrate kind of the return to ACC football is a ACC Network production in association with our friends at Raycom. John Swofford, Building a Legacy, premieres tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here on ACC Network. And it's an inside look at not just his 20-plus years as the commissioner of the ACC, but his really professional journey as a well-rounded, documented high school athlete in Wilkes County to the University of North Carolina as a Morehead Scholar to beginning his athletic administration career. And you think of North Wilkesboro and Wilkes County in western North Carolina, first thing that comes to mind maybe might be the old Speedway. Well, as you see in an excerpt from Building a Legacy, the Speedway had an impact on John Swofford and his family for sure.
North Wilkesboro Speedway, what a legendary place. NASCAR has a huge history with this part of the state of North Carolina, and particularly Wilkes County, North Wilkesboro. Tremendous race that just overtook the entire town when it came here for years and years, nationally televised on ESPN. It was really a great event, special event for this town. Junior Johnson is from Wilkes County, or was from Wilkes County, and an absolute legendary figure. Well, Junior, I remember my dad saying when I was a kid that talking about Junior and what a great customer he was, that Junior learned to drive taking, I guess you would say, illegal liquor around places. And so he wore out a lot of tires. And I'll never forget my dad saying what a great customer he was, because he always paid cash. The passion of sports fans for racing in this area, and then seeing it for high school sports, really impacted me in terms of what I wanted my passion to be. The passion at the beginning is what's so critical if you can follow that passion. This was Junior Johnson's passion. Mine was something different.
And that is a quick look at Building a Legacy. John Swofford tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here on ACC Network. All right, show the people the hair that is going to be...
Oh, no.
Come on. Let's go. Come on.
Here we go.
Come on.
This is what it looks like now.
Look at that.
It's been under a hat, though, so it's a little bit worse than it otherwise was. This is about as long as it'll ever be on national television. Again... You got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. I did not follow that rule. I got to get the hair ready for the kickoff. That's happening later today. Ooh. So when I come back tomorrow, it will be hatless and presentable from the neck up.
Make sure we get a before and after here, kids. Roddy Jones. There it is. Roddy, thanks as always. See you tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.